Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Uncanny Treks as we continue our trek through Mark Waid and Mike Waringo's Fantastic Four. We are up to Volume 4 hereafter, Issues 509 through 513. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Matt, how are you doing this evening?
Doing all right, Bob. Man, these issues, it gets really weird. Gets a little too weird for me.
Is it too much for you, Matt?
A little cheesy, a little too much. Don't always like these kind of stories where they go in this direction, but we'll talk about it as we get into it.
You got to admit, the two superhero issues that come to mind, the two superhero stories that come to mind where characters go to heaven to retrieve somebody are this and Kevin Smith's Quiver. This is so much better than Quiver.
Yeah, it's better than Quiver, but it's also better, too, than that story with Superman in the afterlife. You remember that, where Jonathan Kent
goes? Oh, yeah. Jonathan Kent has a heart attack. That's much better than that.
I'll say that, but I'm just saying, anytime you go in this direction, it gets weird.
Have you read The Resurrection of Nightcrawler?
I've read parts of it, yes.
I would say, in general, this is better than The Resurrection of Nightcrawler, which I also don't remember that strongly. But there is one image from The Resurrection of Nightcrawler. Amazing X-Men was the series. It was written by Jason Aaron. Nightcrawler appearing from heaven, leading a pirate ship of Banffs to help the X-Men.
Yes, which
is
yes.
Pretty amazing image.
That's what I'm remembering.
Nothing in this is as cool as that image, but I do think this is probably a better story.
It's primarily just one issue in this, Bob, that we'll talk about. It's one specific issue in this volume.
All right, so the title of this volume, which is Volume 4 of the Waid Ringo Fantastic Four, we skipped Volume 1 and finished Volume 2 and Volume 3. So we're doing Volume 4 hereafter. That's the title story, which is three parts, and then we have another little two-parter to talk about after the three-parter. But in the first part of Hereafter, issue number 509, what goes down in Hereafter Part 1?
Well, Bob, while the other members of the Fantastic Four mourn Ben's death, Reed searches for a way to resurrect his lost friend.
Yeah, and we open even before we see Reed's scheme, which was also teased at the end of the last arc. We have a flashback, and we see the Thing has just died, and we see Reed doing all these crazy things to try to revive Ben, and these huge twin smoking holes in Ben's chest as Reed is trying to, like, shock Ben's heart. And I just thought it was a really grotesque and really cool image.
And it's leaking what looks like blood, but we're not quite sure.
Because rock blood.
Red, yeah. That's the gross. Is it melted rock?
There was a few other little bits in this issue I wanted to highlight, Matt. So this is a little later after we kind of are back to the present in the aftermath of Ben's death. We have Johnny, sadly, keeps hallucinating that Ben is still alive. And in one of his hallucinations, Johnny telling Ben that you whine like a dentist drill,
yeah.
Which I just thought was a really delightful simile. I really like that. And then the Fantastic Four is very unpopular after the events of Unthinkable and the events of Reed becoming king of Latveria and Ben dying. And that's going to come back to play in the final two-parter that we'll talk about today, too. But because they're unpopular, we see the unflattering newspaper coverage. And I can't remember if it's the Daily Bugle or the New York Times or a different paper, but we see a paper with the headline Treason Times 4 describing the Fantastic Four, which I thought was hilarious. And then we see what Reed's scheme is that you were describing in the summary here. It really does sort of fulfill the premise of Unthinkable, right? Of Reed becoming Doom in order to defeat Doom, both in the sense of Reed has the scarred face. Reed is the king of Latveria. Reed is going to imprison Doom for the rest of their lives just to get back at him. And here we see that even fuller as Reed is going to use the original invention that Dr. Doom tried to build in college that blew up and scarred his face. And he's going to use this machine that Doom built to reach his mother in heaven. And he's going to use it to reach Ben in heaven.
I love the setup. Yeah. And I love the way it was Doom's original machine. That made it just so much better. And then I like how each character is handling things differently. You have Johnny doing the hallucinating, but my favorite part of this, one of my favorite panels, is you see Reed trying to come up with how he is going to save Ben, and he has written all over the machines in his lab. He ran out of paper, so he just starts writing on the machines. It's so flipping weird. But one thing I do love about Fantastic Four comics is that they will when they show Reed, they will just put mumbo jumbo random crap all over everything to make him seem smart. Yeah. But then they'll write down the idea they were going for. So another part of the panel that's one of my favorites, and if this was actually in the omnibus, right? It's 142, but it says on the paper, you've got all these formulas, but then it says in big letters, body loses an average of 25 grams at moment of death. Mass unaccounted for. It's lame in terms. There's still something there that's unaccounted for. Ben's still alive, but you've got all these crazy equations all over the place. It's so pseudoscience.
Well, have you heard that before?
That's
the new age talking
point. That's the weight of your soul, yeah.
Yeah, it's a real common new age talking point that allegedly your body loses 25, or I've often seen it said 21 grams. Yeah. That was the title of a movie I remember liking from the aughts, but I don't know if it was actually good, with Sean Penn and Benicio del Toro and Naomi Watts. I don't remember liking it, but it was called 21 grams and it was about that idea. And not really, it was more just a drama, but it was using that idea. And so, yeah, it is funny to see this common new age talking point be rendered like a Reed scientific idea.
Right. With all the formulas and things around it, you had to use some kind of science to get to this. It's always funny how it works in comics like that.
Well, and I really like how uncomfortable Sue is with Reed's scheme, right? She tells him, and I thought this was another great line, that you keep talking about heaven like it's just another negative zone.
We're just going to go there.
That's one of the really interesting themes about this arc, is that on the one hand, it really is weird and very atypical and very strange as a Fantastic Four story. But on the other hand, it makes perfect sense, right? The Fantastic Four are explorers. That's their whole deal. We made the right decision to skip over the first volume of the Mark Waid, Mike Waringo run, just because I don't think it would have made for great radio. But at the same time, it is a good arc, and it really does help establish, like, the Fantastic Four are explorers. And so them going to heaven is an interesting and natural sort of evolution of the concept.
Well, Bob, when they finally do get where they need to be in issue 510.
Yeah, what goes down in issue 510 hereafter part two, Matt?
The Fantastic Four explore the gates of heaven, but quickly realize they are not supposed to be there. Bob, at the gates of heaven, they are greeted by angels with fiery swords.
And hoods, Matt, which I think both of our favorite panels revolved around the angels. One of mine was on page 5 in the issue. You have the reveal of the hooded angel. The hood comes up and you see a face just saying, "You don't belong here."
They're real creepy. These aren't the angels you want to meet at the gates of heaven. I guess if you're supposed to be there, I guess it's fine. But if you're not, they're pretty scary. But then at one point, they shrink down to the size of tiny razor blades and just start slicing the Fantastic Four, which I thought was cool. And that was my favorite panel.
Eventually, they get past the angels, and we do get some neat moments with them meeting family in heaven. So we get to see Sue and Johnny's parents, the Storms, and we get the amusing detail that neither of the Storms ever thought to ask who killed JFK. So no closure on that mystery. And then we get to see Ben in his human form on the outskirts of heaven with a guy. And I didn't remember slash clock who the guy was at first. And I was wondering, is this Ben Reilly? Is this the Spider-Man?
He's not supposed to be there.
Exactly. No clones in heaven.
Hey, Bob, hold on. I got a quick question here, Bob. Would that be worse than Superboy Prime coming back?
I read some of the stuff they've done with Ben Reilly in the Dan Slott era and later. And what I've seen has actually been pretty good. I haven't hated it.
Mm. All right. Well, good enough, I guess. I don't know. Ben Reilly just... I just can't. I mean, anytime I see it, all I think about is clones. It's not good.
Matt's too traumatized.
Too traumatized. Too much for me. All those holographic covers or all foil covers, the foil covers.
Yeah. Well, we do find out that the guy with Ben Grimm is not Ben Reilly, but it's actually Ben's older brother, Dan, which is a nice little bit. And I guess that sets us up to go into issue 511 hereafter, part three, the conclusion.
Yeah, so they talk through everything and figure it all out, and there was a door that was blocking everybody's entrance into heaven. Well, they discover that Ben was blocking his own way into heaven or something. I don't know. It's cheesy, but anyway, you knew they were going that direction.
Disagree. I think it's really well...
Because I knew they were going this direction the minute we opened the book. Like, when they were building Ben Grimm with the blocks, it's so cheesy, but anyway.
You're so wrong.
I don't like that level of cheese.
It's not cheesy at all. Certainly not compared to Hush.
That's it. Well, yeah, I mean, we're not comparing those two things.
This is so much less cheese than any issue that ever features Hush. And it's well set up that Reed is, we didn't talk about it, but Reed stole Ben's corpse from the U.S. Army.
That I'm good with. That
was
cool.
He has it floating in tanks. And initially we think that, oh, okay, it's Ben hasn't been able to go through the gates of heaven because Reed has Ben's body hooked up to all this science stuff. And it's no, the reveal is Ben doesn't feel ready to go on. He still feels like he has stuff to do. He still feels connection to his family. And so he hasn't transitioned on why Reed is able to hold him. And it's a nice inversion of usually the Fantastic Four formula is what insane thing has Reed done and how will the rest of the family deal with it? And it's a nice fake out because it sets up, oh, what insane thing has Reed done to curse his best friend again? But then the reveal is, no, actually, Ben did it to himself, which I think is a good reveal. And I think the reveal that, like, the machine blocking him is made of rocks is a really clever visual.
Yeah, Bob liked it. No. All right.
Well, it has to be this way if you're going to tell the story this way, because you can't have Reed involuntarily resurrect Ben, right?
Right, which is why I like the setup of the story in the first part issue. And then it starts to fall apart the second issue. And then we get to this third issue, Bob, 5/11.
And how does it fall apart?
Because I don't think they should have gone to heaven to begin with. The dude rode himself into a hole. Yeah, they go to hell all they want. That's fine.
You get to see a very interesting, creepy version of heaven with the unsettling angels.
Heaven's real, Bob.
Okay. One thing I did want to raise about this issue of 3, right, is...
From the get-go.
Of Hereafter 3. We see Ben make a decision to get resurrected over the course of the issue.
Right.
And obviously Wade couldn't know this at the time, but in the Hickman run, we see how long Ben winds up living, which is not something that I think is, I don't know that that had ever been discussed about Ben before that issue of Hickman, where we see like the thing living millennia into the future. But I do think it makes an interesting spin of, even though it's Ben choosing to get resurrected, it's, oh man, I don't know if he would do that if he would know how long he would live.
I don't think he would either, because that was really sad how long he lived in that. He's literally like eternal.
It is interesting how that Hickman arc kind of changes this Wade arc in a way, retrospectively. What goes down in Hereafter Part 3?
So Bob, the Fantastic Four visit heaven and they meet their creator.
He's Jack Kirby, man.
That's Jack Kirby. Sense. It's literally Jack Kirby, everyone. They meet Jack Kirby.
Yeah, which is awesome. And I would also say I remembered that Kirby was God, obviously, because how could you forget that? But I'd forgotten that during the course of their conversation, God takes a call from Stan Lee, which I thought was very funny.
It takes a call from Stan Lee, does this like fourth wall breaking stuff that's like not funny like Deadpool is sometimes.
It's not meant to be funny.
It's meant to be sweet. It's meant to be this moment where, oh, we're meeting our creator for the first time, and what do we do, and why do we exist? And it gets so, I don't know. I just think that when you do these types of stories, you're setting such a high expectation trying to tell a story like that, that you're not going to meet it. I get what they were going for, but it just doesn't, like...
It's a
good... Did Batman beat Bill Finger and Bob Kane?
You wouldn't do this story...
They'll tell you what to do the story with Batman.
If Batman were to meet his creator, it would just be Bill Finger. And also, yeah, you wouldn't do this story with Batman. That's the whole point, is that they're doing this story in a way that works with the Fantastic Four, because they're doing it as explorers. And there is a long history of metatextual stuff in the Fantastic Four. In the original Lee Kirby run, you see Stan and Jack as guests at Reed and Sue's wedding. There definitely is a thing where Ben is a little bit, in terms of temperament, background, behavior, Jewishness, he's pretty similar to Jack Kirby. There's a lot of metatextual stuff that you could do here. Yeah, I think you could do a pretty similar story with Spider-Man and it would work. But yeah, I think it works for Fantastic Four. It could maybe work for Spider-Man, but it's not something you would do with Batman or the X-Men.
Yeah, but then where do you go from here, Bob? Like, I know they've done more Fantastic Four stories since.
I think that's an interesting question as we finish out the run.
You literally meet God, okay? Okay, what story are you going to do next? He can draw whatever you want to fix in the next issue.
Well, so there's several things. I mean, one, the answer of where you go next is obvious. You do the next issue of Fantastic Four. And we've already read the Hickman run, which is one of the best Fantastic Four runs of all time. It goes in totally new directions. And so it's, yeah, you do another issue.
But now that I know that they've met But here's my question, Bob. I wonder if I would have read the Hickman run before, I'm sorry, if I read the Hickman run after this, if I would have thought it was as good, because does the death of Ben Grimm and his resurrection, would it have cheapened the death of Johnny Storm in the Hickman run? Had I already known that? Because I didn't know about this issue.
I think that's not the fault of either Mark Waid or John Hickman. That's just the reality of these comics, and not just Fantastic Four comics, but all big two superhero comics.
Right.
They never end. You have to cycle through character deaths. The way Waid writes this, it's pretty clever in shutting down. This is obviously only a one-time thing. You can't do this resurrection path.
What if he became a returning character? Check.
Well, and the other thing, you say like, oh, what do they do after they meet God? They've already met God. The original Galactus trilogy is basically about the Fantastic Four meeting and defeating God. That's what Galactus is, both on the page and in Kirby's intentions, clearly meant to be. This makes perfect sense for like how the Fantastic Four have been historically.
This is just a strange way of ending, of resurrecting the thing. I think the part where they could have just not gone through the door and they could have just done something different. There's just a spot in the comic where you could have been, okay, don't let them go through the door, or just let them peek inside. Don't have them interact with Kirby. It just makes it so weird. It makes it too weird for me. I don't know. I'm having trouble with it.
Have you read the Grant Morrison Animal Man?
I've read the first issue, the first couple of issues.
But you haven't gotten to the stuff Animal Man meets Grant Morrison?
No.
Morrison did that in Animal Man in the late 80s. This is interesting in how it's both similar and different. The thing that, and this is, it's been, yeah, over a decade since I've read that Morrison Animal Man run, so I might be misremembering it. But as I recall in the comic, Buddy, Animal Man's family has been killed, and he wants to know who's responsible, and he tracks down and gets to Grant Morrison, the writer, and he's just like, how could you do this to me? And it's interesting because there it's Grant Morrison writing himself, and he just portrays himself as just this, in a way, not very flattering portrayal of, oh, it's just a job. I needed drama, so I killed your family. Not considering that it hurts Animal Man, quote unquote.
Yeah.
So he undoes it. That's how, at least how I remember that going. Whereas that's an unfeeling mercenary depiction of the creator. Here it's interesting that Kirby is God, and in part it's because Kirby is dead and a lot of comics mourns for him. And so I just think that the dynamics of meeting the creator, and the creator is just some schmuck who just does his job, versus meeting the creator and the creator is God, is interesting.
I didn't think about that. I'll have to go back and reread some of that Animal Man.
Might be something to do at some point in the future, because I think there's only 3 volumes of it for Morrison.
Well, Bob, if this was DC Comics, they would be turning Jack Kirby into a villain in the next couple of years. Then.
Yeah, this is also interesting to think about. One other dimension to it is, in the DC universe, the Christian God is real, right? The Spectre exists. The Spectre is the literal wrath of the Christian God. Hell is a real place, and it's Christian hell. Whereas Marvel is more an atheist universe, and there are hells, but they're not Christian hell. They're just interdimensional beings who look like demons and find it convenient to pretend to be Christian demons.
Right.
And so it's interesting to think about this as Marvel heaven in that context, too. Of it sort of is Christian or Jewish heaven, but it's also sort of not Christian and Jewish heaven. I don't have anything profound to say about it, but it's just an interesting contrast to the Marvel cosmology.
Well, Bob, anything else to say about this? This is pretty much the main part of this volume, the Hereafter piece. We do get these two, this like backup story. It's more about Spider-Man, the next 2 issues. It's more filler, I guess.
The only other thing I would say is, obviously, they use this encounter with God as like a deus ex machina to get rid of the scarring on Reed's face and to put the rocks back on Ben, which...
We got to put the rocks back on Ben.
You do. I know Matt's going to think that's super stupid and cheesy, but I do think, at least on the craft level, the way Ringo draws Kirby erasing the scar off Reed's face and the way he draws the rocks coming back on Ben really do look visually cool, even if you find the concept a little cheesy.
It's very cool to look at, but it is very cheesy. It's very Wizard of Oz.
You're right about that, especially the angels looking like the flying monkeys from Wizard of Oz. There is a real Wizard of Oz vibe here. I agree with you that the final two-parter, which I guess we can just talk about as a two-parter, right? I agree with you that it is a little bit filler. It is at least interestingly following up on the consequences of Unthinkable, right? Because it's Johnny seeking out Spider-Man to ask what to do now that everybody hates the Fantastic Four. So it at least is advancing the story of the run a little bit in a way I found amusing.
That it was funny. It was a fun story to have after such a serious take where you meet God in the previous issue. Like, you have to do a little bit of a reset going into the next one of just trying to make it more. It's Johnny Storm and Spider-Man versus Hydro-Man. That's the basis.
They're in a water park, so we got a lot of water park gags in 512, which is Spider-Sense Part 1, where we see Johnny getting mad at a homeless man who's getting mad at a homeless woman because the homeless woman put a Spider-Man shirt on her dog, and they have all these Human Torch shirts, and nobody, not even the homeless people, want the Human Torch shirt. And then the homeless man is like, why did you put the only good shirt on your dog?
Well, Bob, the one strange panel in this that I think is a product of its time, the I Have No Pants, Johnny Storm, where he's lost all of his clothing and he's in the kiddie pool with a bunch of children with no clothes on.
Yeah, which on the one hand is a pretty good gag, but yeah, on the other hand is a little cringy.
It's a little creepy looking.
Yeah, not the best.
So, Bob, at the end of the issue, though, at the end of this thing, they do have a throwback to everything that happened where Johnny's boxers are hanging on the flagpole.
Yeah.
His Fantastic Four boxers.
I guess I've been saying it wrong because it's Unthinkable and Authoritative Action, right?
Oh, yeah, Authoritative Action.
I've been saying Unthinkable the whole episode when I mean Authoritative Action.
Yeah. It's got the same look, you know, he's got his boxers hanging up there.
Well, anything else you want to say about the cheesiness of Life in Heaven or Life in a Water Park, Matt?
But really, Bob, I'll just say that this particular run, of the ones we've read, this has been the weakest, but that's just in my opinion.
There's a fair point to be made. I think, definitely, I thought this would make for better radio than the first volume, Imaginauts. I don't know if I think it's a better comic or not. I think maybe 10-2, because I like the Hereafter stuff a lot more than you do, clearly. But regardless of whether we like it or dislike it, I thought it made for pretty good radio, so I wanted to focus on it. I think we'll see what we actually think when we're outlining listeners, but we've got two trades left of the Mark Waid run. We've got Volume 5, which I believe is an Avengers Disassembled tie-in, and then we've got Volume 6, Rising Storm, which is like a Johnny spotlight story. I don't want to say what happens there for risk of spoilers, and also because I don't remember it very well, but I do only remember it slightly. But I think we're just going to try and do both trades together for our next issue to wrap up the Waid and Moringa Fantastic Four. So that'd be issues 514 through 524. So look for that from us in a few days. And until then, thanks for listening to Uncanny Trucks. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland.
Thanks for listening.